I hope I'm received with love, the love and the appreciation that I've given to that city, and that I still give to that city. You know, I hope, hoping that the favor can be returned, because they've given me the opportunity to grow in this league as a leader that I am today.
James Harden says he's excited to face his old team tonight as he returns to Houston for the first time as a Brooklyn Net. But given Harden's infamously messy exit, do his former teammates and Rockets fans feel the same? Today, Malika Andrews explains what the ex-MVP told her about his regrets and his new city, and why the rest of the league should be terrified. I'm Pablo Torre. It's Wednesday, March 3rd. This is ESPN Daily. Malika, where are you right now?
I am sitting at a conference table in my hotel room in Houston, Texas.
Malika Andrews covers the Nets and the NBA for ESPN, and she just interviewed James Harden, and she's in Houston for his return to town. And you are in Houston, and I'm very jealous because I love soap operas, Malika, and you are going to the first game that James Harden is playing in Houston after going to the Nets after dumping the entire Rockets franchise.
Right.
This is a juicy, messy, and yet also super impactful transaction that reshaped the NBA. How excited are you for tonight?
It's the equivalent of in the soap opera when the two women are standing at the top of the stairs and the one is like maybe going to be pushing somebody, but also they might work it out. That's the moment. We're on the precipice. That's where we're standing right now. It feels like I'm excited to see the way that James Harden is received, because we're in a unique situation going to this game where the Houston Rockets allow over 4,000 fans in Toyota Center. Mm. And so I am interested to see, given the way James Harden left, but also because he was pretty beloved when he was in Houston by the fan base, and then also recently his reaching back out to Houston to try to help in the wake of this devastating winter storm, to see all of that be melded together and see what kind of reaction these fans have to their former star coming back.
Yeah, and you got to sit down with James Harden himself this week, and we'll get to what you learned in that interview throughout our conversation in a little bit. I can only imagine what it's like to be a Rockets fan heading into this particular game, because what James Harden just did in San Antonio on this same Texas road trip on Monday night.
Harden, deep three. Yes, sir! Around the world and down for the beard.
How would you describe what James did to the Spurs?
It was incredible. I mean, I asked Kyrie Irving about it.
I think we have to implement the phrase, get used to it. When James is being James, it makes all our job a lot easier.
He's had 7 triple-doubles already this season with Brooklyn since joining in mid-January. The only Nets player that's had more in a single season is Jason Kidd. Not only that, but his 30, 14, and 15 stat line on Monday, he
Wild.
Had 0 turnovers. It was the first time that a player has recorded that line with 0 turnovers since they started counting individual turnovers in 77-78. James Harden, when he came to Brooklyn, a lot of people saw that as an added luxury. They already had Kevin Durant. They already had Kyrie Irving. Did they really need James Harden, or is this just an embarrassment of riches? But what James Harden has proven is his best ability, maybe, is his availability, because he has been on the floor consistently when Kevin Durant has been in and out of the lineup for injuries, for health and safety protocols, when Kyrie Irving has been in and out of the lineup for various reasons. He has come in, adapted his game, elevated his teammates, and the Nets players like playing with him. He's arguably become one of the more reliable players on the Brooklyn Nets because he's consistently not only out on the floor, but doing different things. And he's been very deliberate about delivering that message that he's trying to be whatever the Nets need him to be on any given night. And so far, he's been pretty successful. And so you do just have to cock a little bit of an eyebrow at what he's been able to do, the way he's been able to tweak and reinvent and have this immediate impact that has become so essential to what the Nets are trying to do.
Lots of eyebrows have been cocked in James Harden's direction. And now we have the situation with the Nets where the Nets aren't just a showcase for phenomenal talent. They're breathing down the necks of the Philadelphia 76ers. They're just a half game behind first place. And this, as you said, is without Kevin Durant on the floor. They've been 7-1 with James Harden running the offense. What's your sense of the comfort zone that the Nets are in right now, given that Durant isn't there and that Harden and Kyrie seem to be getting along so much better than anybody even thought about?
James Harden said when he first got to Brooklyn, when he had a couple of little hiccups, minor hiccups, when he'd have 6, 7, 8 turnovers in a game, I just need a little bit more time to get comfortable. And that's sort of a line that a lot of players can say, and you say, all right, sure. But he was right. And when we talked the other day about his comfort level, he said that it is increased every single game, and you're seeing the fruits of that now. And so you're right that the Nets now are looking around and saying, I mean, look what we've been able to do, and we don't even have Kevin Durant yet.
So when Kevin Durant comes back, I mean, it's funny, like the straws Nets critics are grasping at now to wonder, okay, when does this NBA Finals pathway get complicated? And people are pointing to, okay, when KD gets back, the chemistry experiment, we're gonna have to revisit all of it because only one ball, three egos, that guy KD may be the best player in the world when fully healthy. What does James say about what'll happen to this team when Kevin Durant returns?
Well, James isn't concerned.
I'm just excited for us as a whole to be able to play as many games as we can together because of the potential that we have is very, very, you know, scary.
He said that there's always going to be people talking about, can they fit? Can they make this work? Can they make it happen?
One thing about me, I can fit in any situation and on any team playing alongside any player just because my game is very versatile.
And he said that it was a no-brainer, and he knew. He said, I knew it was going to work.
I was
going to
make it work, whereas if I had to sacrifice, you know, then I was willing to do that in order for the greater of the team.
They've only played 7 games together so far, so it's a small sample size, but thus far it's been successful. To me, what the Nets have proven is they're worth the benefit of the doubt right now.
The thing that raised my eyebrow most recently that helped address some of the concerns you just alluded to was how Kyrie has been talking about James in public. Yeah. He said in February, Malika, that he had told James Harden,
you know, we established that maybe 4 days ago now. I just looked at him and I said, you're the point guard and I'm going to play shooting guard. And that was as simple as that.
That is not something that Kyrie does easily. He is famous now for being very prideful about how good he is. But what's your sense of the relationship with James and Kyrie at this point?
They seem to really enjoy playing with each other. And having them actually come together hasn't changed that drive for either one of them. But the role players on this team, what's so interesting is watching just how much better James Harden is making the guys like Timothée Luau-Cabarrot, those types of players, Nicholas Claxton, are thriving when they are getting set up by James Harden. having those roles defined has benefited more than just the two of them. It's made the entire team better because James Harden is well suited to be setting up the rest of the team so that they can achieve what they're trying to, which is to win a championship. And they haven't been shy about talking about that.
No, they haven't been. And the fact that they can be bold enough to discuss title contention, I mean, you just described, let's be blunt about it, you described a wonderful teammate to have, a leader, someone who is bringing in all aspects of the organization. That is not the James Harden that the Houston Rockets last saw. How big is that contrast?
It's big. And from talking to James now, the impression I get is he knows how big that contrast is. And what he says is that person wasn't me. The person that ended the drama that swirled, the attention, the negative attention that it got, he is working to dissociate from that because he doesn't believe that that is an accurate representation of who he is. But he also doesn't shy away from the fact that that's who he was and what the relationship was in that moment.
I mean, it wasn't me, Malika, is both an accurate basketball assessment. It's also a line from a song by Shaggy in which
yeah, man.
Our collective credulity is challenged. So I know there's complexity here, but after the break, I want to get into what James told you about how that exit felt to him and also go behind the scenes on how it all went down.
When you're on a business trip, you know what completely goes off the rails? Your workout routine, especially when you book a hotel that doesn't have a gym. So what ends up happening is you do a few push-ups and sit-ups in your room, run around the block, or just skip it entirely. Lame. If you just stay at La Quinta by Wyndham, you'll discover there's a fully equipped fitness center at every location. Now you can wake up and power your buys and tries the right way or de-stress with some cardio. The choice is yours. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
The way James left, Malika, it is worth recapping some of this because in December, he was expected to report to training camp and meet their first-year head coach, Stephen Silas, with the Houston Rockets. But instead, he was kind of like Carmen Sandiego, but for nightclubs. He was in Atlanta partying. He was attending Lil Baby, the rapper, his friend, his birthday party. Then he was in Vegas at what was reported to be a strip club, but then James Harden clarified wasn't a strip club, but he was maskless and violating COVID protocols. So Malika, you got to sit down with James Harden, who was an elusive interview, by the way. You sat down with him one-on-one virtually. You were able to ask him about returning to Houston where you are right now. What did he say about how things ended there?
He said that it was very, very difficult because he thought that he was going to be a Houston Rocket forever.
I thought I would never leave that franchise. I thought I was going to be Houston, obviously, for the rest of my career. I'd had different goals, and, you know, I seen a different vision for myself, my career, my family.
Things changed. The window for what he saw as them winning imminently closed, and that didn't align with his goals. But that doesn't mean the Rockets forget the way that things ended, because that was hard. That was hard on that team. That was hard on that locker room. Players like DeMarcus Cousins, who was very vocal about the way that he didn't believe it was fair, the way that James Harden was discussing that their window had closed and he didn't see a way forward. He said he didn't think that was fair to the rest of the team. DeMarcus Cousins isn't there anymore. But there are plenty of players on the Rockets who James Harden is going to see. And they're probably going to hug, but it doesn't mean there aren't still some scars from the way that things ended in Houston. He also said that he wished it had gone differently.
It just didn't go as well and smooth as I planned. The communication between myself and the front office, got a little shaky.
Shaky is the word that he used. He said the communication between myself and the front office got a little shaky. He doesn't while he's balancing regretting the way that he left people feeling and the way that the negative attention made him feel, he also doesn't necessarily say that he would do anything differently.
Mm.
In the number of months now since he's been in Brooklyn that I've gotten to know him, he doesn't seem like a guy who lives regretting his decisions, even if those decisions, in hindsight, maybe weren't the best one, if that makes sense.
Well, he got, I mean, Malika, he got exactly what he wanted and is now contending for the thing that he told his teammates he would not be able to contend for with them, which is an NBA title.
And at the end of the day, that's what he says. He said, I'm happy. I'm excited.
I am where I am now. I'm very, very happy and excited and wish nothing but the best for the city and that organization.
I wish nothing but the best for the city and the organization, but he got what he wanted. He's in Brooklyn, and Brooklyn has a very real chance of being a winner.
Yeah, there is some history is written by the winner's logic there that I do like realistically understand. He's made a bet that this is going to be better for him in the long run than sticking around in Houston would have been. I just have to put on my tinfoil hat for a second, Malika, because I need to ask you about this fat suit that he was allegedly wearing in Houston, because I would see photos of James and he looked completely out of shape one day, and then he shows up in Brooklyn and he looks exactly like he does now, which is a guy who's like a peak performer. Am I crazy to think about that?
I haven't found a fat suit in his locker. But when he showed up in Brooklyn, I saw the photos too. Hey, man, angles are everything. Maybe that's part of it. But when he showed up in Brooklyn and he was asked, what sort of shape are you in? He just said,
great.
Great. Full stop. Flashed a smile. Next question. I don't really know what to make of that. Plus, Pablo, baby blue and red aren't exactly slimming colors. Black Jets uniform, that is a nice slimming color. It's just more flattering. Let's just go with that.
My tinfoil hat is permanently staying on my head, given all of that information.
Conspiracy Pablo is out.
So I also want to ask about James and his relationship with this city of Houston, because as much as we can joke about all of the stuff around his exit, it does feel, based on your conversation with him, that there is like substance to his affection for Houston itself.
That, he said, was one of the hardest parts of deciding to leave, was the emotional balance of wanting out and wanting to compete, but also genuinely loving the city and the fans and the people he got to know over the 8 seasons that he was in Houston. Houston recently was devastated by a winter storm that left people without power. People's pipes froze. Those pipes burst and destroyed homes. Because they didn't have power, that meant that cooking was challenging and that preparing food was difficult. And when James Harden saw that, he donated 3,000 meals. But then he looked around and he said, I don't think that's enough, and I don't think that's the only need here. We also need to start partnering with power companies. We need to start partnering with electricians. We need to start helping people repair their homes. We need to donate cases of water. He said he'd been on the phone with Houston's mayor daily for a time, trying to figure out what it was that he could do to help, because he told me, I still feel like I'm a part of that community. Even being in Brooklyn, he said, it hasn't changed the way I feel about the city and everything it's done for me.
I feel like Houston is still a part of me. Obviously, I did some pretty amazing things on the court, but off the court, I was, you know, hopefully as impactful as I was on the court. With this winter storm, so many people were affected and still affected. And so I feel like me trying to provide as much food and water as I can and replumbing of these people's homes and so they can live and be safe and be happy is something that I felt like it was needed to do.
That recognition to me shows just how much this city still means to him.
The civic relationship between athletes and the teams that they play so long for, it's always complicated and certainly irrational. I think of LeBron James, who has done so much work in his hometown of Akron and around Cleveland. But when he went back to play in Cleveland with the Miami Heat, it was one of the most violently loud arenas that you could hear through the screen.
LeBron James and the Miami Heat at Quicken Loans Arena on a night unlike any other.
Tonight, I just hope nothing bad happens. I don't mind booing and all that type of stuff. But LeBron's a good guy, but he did do some things wrong this summer.
People who I've talked to, our colleagues who were in the building for that, have said it was a little bit scary.
Yeah.
Fandom isn't totally rational. Love and hate are on two sides of the same coin. And that's the coin that was flipped when LeBron returned to Cleveland. And maybe it's going to be a dime instead of a quarter because of the number of fans that are going to be in Toyota Center. But it's the same coin that's going to be flipped on Wednesday when James Harden returns, because these fans loved him and they hate the way he left. When I checked into my hotel, they asked me, what am I here for? And I said, the Rockets game tomorrow. And immediately the attendant's face looked at me and said, oh, James Harden's coming back. You know that? I said, yeah. And she said, he left us.
What does James say that he hopes to experience when he gets into this building for the first time in so long tonight?
He said that he hopes to be received with love.
I hope I'm received with love. The love and the appreciation that I've given to that city and that I still give to that city. Hoping that the favor can be returned. Nothing but love and appreciation. It'll continue to be that way.
He's not sure whether that'll mean boos, whether that'll mean cheers, whether that will mean people are holding signs ridiculing or congratulating or being thankful for his time in Houston. But I think he's wishing that it's going to be more positive than not.
It feels like his chances of winning an NBA title are a lot bigger, Malika, than his chances of being received with all of the adoration that I think he's hoping for.
I think you may be right about that, Pablo, but I think he's trying to put that out of his mind until he absolutely has to face it.
Malika Andrews, as we stand at the top of the soap opera staircase, thank you for foreshadowing what might happen next.
Thanks for having me, Pablo.
Last night, the Rockets announced that they plan to retire Harden's jersey, number 13, eventually. Houston owner Tillman Fertitta said, quote, James Harden will always be a Rocket, end quote. You can watch James Harden and the Brooklyn Nets take on the Houston Rockets tonight at 7:30 p.m. Eastern on ESPN. Coming up, our colleague Sarah Spain is now an owner of the Chicago Red Stars, so I made her tell me all about her new gig.
Delicious meat, nutritious. In the snack that packs a real protein punch, wonderful pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each 1-ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value, Trust me, I've been eating them like there's no tomorrow all week. Wonderful Pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with your family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you, like me, are on the go a lot, taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries, whatever it may be. Well, the good news is, not only are Wonderful Pistachios a complete protein providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut, or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snack game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more.
Here's another story I want you to know. My ESPN colleague, Sarah Spain, is adding yet another jealousy-inducing line to her already excessively impressive resume. And it ties into a topic we've been hearing and talking more about recently, the changing face of ownership in pro sports. So I called Sarah up to talk about her new role with the National Women's Soccer League. Sarah Spain, as the newest co-owner of the Chicago Red Stars, I have one question to begin. Are you already demanding that people call you Miss Spain, like, you know, Bob Kraft and all these owners do in the NFL? How does this work now that you've left me in steerage and crossed over into the world of the ownership suites?
Yeah, I've provided a full list, actually. I decided I would be like a Roger Dorn owner, so I will be playing center mid. I had to let Julie Ertz know that, which was a disappointment to her being one of the greatest players of all time, but I think she understood. Also, I'll be immediately taking vacation. So I think I'm starting to get the hang of it already.
Yeah, I mean, I'm joking with you, but also you have, Sarah, like, power. You have real power now. And it feels surreal because I know you as the person that I do TV with, and we live in a world of whimsy.
Yes.
So how are you feeling now about what is legitimately a crazily exciting new venture for you?
I find it equally as wild and super cool. Mainly because, of course, I think of when I think of professional sports ownership of something like the NFL, like the Jerry Jones of the world doing the draft from his James Bond yacht, right?
Yes.
And so that's not a conceivable thing to dream of or aspire to, at least for me. So obviously, my investment in this is it did not require the same kind of literal wealth, but it did require the team reaching out to me and earning the opportunity for them to want me to be a part of this and to feel like I would help be a good caretaker for the team, which is really feels great. And Pablo, you know that I actually spend a lot of time criticizing owners
Yes.
and people in charge for their practices, their lack of investment in women's sports. So I've spent years sort of picking at this stuff, and to actually be in a position to change it, I hope, is really cool.
Yeah, just so we can all catch up to speed here, who else is on the leadership team with you? Who else is owning this team? Because it was a big announcement with like 14 people who came together in this kind of Justice League sort of sense to own this thing.
Yeah, so it's a really diverse group. The ones you might recognize, Kendall Coyne Schofield and her husband, Michael. She's, of course, a multi-time gold medalist in women's hockey. Also a broadcaster, also the first female coach ever hired by the Blackhawks. She's done everything. And her husband, Michael, is an NFL player. Izzy Adonijé was an NFL player as well, played for the Bears for a long time, was in the NFL for 11 years. Julie Haddon is a massive bigwig at the NFL, interestingly, which is great because all those relationships that she has from working as a senior VP of global brand and consumer marketing there means she's talking to all the companies and working with all the people that we want to bring over to the NWSL as well. And that's just a couple. One of the things that is so special, I think, is if there's an athlete on that team and they think they'd be more comfortable talking to an owner who's female or Latinx or Black or LGBTQ plus or a woman, they have one.
Mm.
And I think we underestimate the importance of that at the very highest levels where you feel like you've got a direct line to the people actually making decisions.
So for those who are unfamiliar, and I am one of those people, how do you own a sports team? What is the process like? How does this idea germinate? How do things evolve from there?
Well, in my case, I get approached by the owner who I had interviewed once or twice. Actually, you know, I threw a party at the Red Stars, a tailgate party a couple years ago, just because I love the team. And I was like, I want to get people to be more aware of it. So if I tell them I'm bringing the beer and the Malort and the pizza, they will show up, and they did. And so Arnon was actually out there, you know, taking Malort shots and hanging out with us. So I knew him fairly well. And so he reached out. And then it's a matter of asking about, are there minimums for investment? What are those? Going to my financial advisor, talking about, you know, I've never invested in anything like this. It's a big chunk of change for me. So what do the projections look like? There's a whole back room area where you can go in and look at all the financials and all the investors and, you know, really get a feel for what it is that the long-term goals are of the league and the team. And then there's background checks, and you have to get approved by the league, and then you have to get approved by the other teams in the league. So they'll send out all the information about the prospective owners. And then, you know, then you wire your money over, and then you get to lord your power over people.
I want to hear more about the lording in a second. But when did you even start thinking that this was a thing that you could do in your life? Because we talked on the show recently about Renee Montgomery, former WNBA player, who's now a co-owner of the Atlanta Dream and a VP for that team, unprecedented in the WNBA. Like, this is not a thing, even among the players in these sports, that happens very often at all. So for you, when did this become a thing?
As soon as I heard about Angel City, you know, Julie Foudy gave me a little bit of a leak a couple days before that actually hit. And I thought to myself, what? My friend Julie, who also happens to be one of the greatest soccer players of all time, and just
also that,
you know, a massive, you know, businesswoman. But beyond that, my friend Julie is going to be a team owner. And then I start looking at the list, and it's Abby Wambach and Mia Hamm and Natalie Portman and Jennifer Garner. And I realize this is a brand new model where you don't have to be someone who is a massive business mogul with billions of dollars. You can be a collective of people that are all putting together your funds in pursuit of a sort of different kind of ownership. As soon as I was talking to them, I thought, man, how cool would it be to be a part owner of the Red Stars, my team in Chicago? And so when Arnon reached out, I think he probably had already heard me on multiple platforms being like, I'm going to be an owner. I'm going to do this.
So you are self-fulfilling a prophecy that you made on all the platforms available to you.
Yes, yes.
Which is a very Sarah Spade move, I must say.
Yes. So just talk my way into something. That's how I operate.
Well, that brings me to my follow-up question then. Do you plan on yelling at Natalie Portman in CBA negotiations?
100%. Listen, there's a lot of positives to this new adventure. One of them very clearly is when the world is mostly back to normal and Angel City, which doesn't start play until next year, is playing the Red Stars. Just the incredible amount of trash talk that I will be directing in the way of Julie Foudy and Jennifer Garner and Billie Jean King and Serena Williams. And also the incredible ladies' night that's going to happen after the game.
So what do you want people to know about the NWSL and the Red Stars as you go off as this now newly powerful owner lording over the rest of us?
The NWSL has the best women's soccer players or footballers in the world. If you love watching the women's national team, all of those incredible stars are playing for NWSL teams. I believe right now our Red Stars team has five of them. So if you're showing up for games, you're seeing Julie Ertz and Megan Rapinoe and Alyssa Nair. You know, you're seeing the women that I find both aspirational and instructional in the way that they play and pursue equality and fight for causes that matter and inspire us. A lot of people talk about supporting women's sports, and a lot of people love these athletes. The next step is to really invest in that and show up at games and buy the merch and watch them on TV. The NWSL and the WNBA were the only two leagues last year during the pandemic that went up in ratings. And the NWSL was 400%+ up because they finally got TV partnerships that allowed people to watch and people want to watch. I think everyone needs to just start showing up for the things that they like and they care about.
Well, Sarah Spain, Miss Spain, I apologize. Yes. Thank you for coming down from your luxury suite and joining us in our world of whimsy.
This is the last time I will talk to you.
That sounds fair. I'm Pablo Torre. This has been ESPN Daily. I'll talk to you tomorrow.